Welcome back to another guest interview, this week with visionary plastic surgeon Dr. Emily Hartman, who describes a truly novel mind-body approach to her aesthetic practices, where she incorporates Reiki, meditation, and other healing practices pre and post-op as a way to reduce complications and limit the need for pain medications. In fact, her patients undergo plastic surgery with zero pain meds at all. Emily's approach to her patients is intriguing and a model for health and well-being that goes way beyond aesthetics. I promise you, you're gonna love this week's bite. So let's dig in.
Dr. Hartman, I'm so excited to have you here, and I'm so curious and interested in hearing your unique perspective of how you meld two things that we kind of don't really see maybe in alignment, but you've beautifully kind of captured and sewn together. So tell us a little bit about what you do and your philosophy.
Thank you for that thoughtful question. I am a board certified plastic and reconstructive surgeon. I've been in practice for almost 8 years. And what I do has been taking shape over the entire personal experience to what I have created now, which is a fully embodied experience through the transformation of plastic surgery. And we use holistic measures to help people through the healing process in a mind, body, and soul approach. So I'm looking to help people truly find what it is that makes them happy and conduct plastic surgery in a way that is satisfying their needs, whether it's, you know, spiritually, physically, emotionally, the entire package is considered. So it's really, I'm realizing a dream of mine.
That's amazing. And I want you to, if you could, describe a little bit more how you reconcile, and this is not a challenge in any way, shape, or form, but in our minds, I think often we either wholeheartedly embrace plastic surgery, as we do in California and Beverly Hills, where I practice, or we reject it. And what I'm hearing from you is that there's a way to bring aesthetics and beauty and what we kind of consider sometimes to be vanity with a spiritual process. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So we're all experiencing things on a variety of levels. And perhaps it would be best to start with my background and my story, and then bring that experience into how I now approach patients. I got into plastic surgery because I just absolutely love helping people and changing people's lives. I am not curing cancer. I'm not saving someone's life, but I might be making their life more worth living and more in line with the way they feel they need to be. So when I got into plastic surgery, that is what hooked me. In addition to just loving to, you know, operating and the hands-on approach. Then as I went through my training in residency and having my own experiences with anxiety and being a young mom, I have three children, and I started in medical school with my motherhood journey. And so having these, my own personal experiences, I started using more Eastern approaches to try to find solutions for myself in a world that was very chaotic. When I started my own practice in Chico, California, which is my hometown, it was terrible. It was terrifying. I had so much stress on my shoulders and trying to just keep everything happening. My marriage was suffering, all these unmet expectations. And so I really tanked out. And I think you could definitely call it burnout. So I had to dig deep into myself and pull myself out of the trenches, so to speak. So the COVID shutdown was what gave me the opportunity to really do that in personal investigation. And I realized that what I wanted to do was use these different tools to help patients navigate the world of plastic surgery, because there is so much information coming at us and we constantly are trying to keep up with appearances, and it's easy to search for a quick fix, but we're not actually getting to the root of anything. And also through my surgical experience with my own patients, I had had some wake-up calls where, you know, I didn't see the red flags coming. I didn't pay attention. I didn't put as much thought into it as I could have, and actually caused some real harm to certain patients where they emotionally just came unhinged after surgery because the outcomes weren't what they expected, whether that was realistic or not. They still realized that what they were hoping to change in themselves is not actually what they were looking for or what they needed. No, really, they needed to leave their abusive husband or kick their alcohol addiction, something really, really important. And when they go spend all of their money and all of their time on plastic surgery and all the downtime and the risks and the recovery, and then to find themselves on the other end, it can really trigger people into a serious depression. So I actually had to admit a patient to behavioral health services because they became suicidal. So that was a really profound experience for me, and everything just seemed to stack on top of each other. My focus was clear. I knew exactly what I needed to do. And then I've been in a driving force ever since. So it's really been a phenomenal turnaround. But I see plastic surgery impact patients every day in a positive way. People who come in with very realistic expectations and needs, going through this slower technique, as I call it, of hypnotherapy and Reiki and seeing my nurse practitioner prior to surgery to get optimized. And she actually spends time talking with them about all of their baseline issues. So it helps give us another layer of people talking to them, because not everyone feels comfortable talking about certain things with the doctor, quote unquote. Even though I consider myself a very nice, approachable person.
You're just offering a window, right? However that presents itself.
Right. Then we go through the surgery experience, and then everything is continued afterwards. It's really a beautiful thing to watch someone with their anxiety managed appropriately. So that's my driving force.
I really want to dig in deep into how you meld these two, because your approach is truly integrative. It's not that you have a plastic surgery practice and you have this spa that people can hang out at. You're really integrating the two. I want to just acknowledge how brave and courageous it is to take a difficult situation, which is, your patient suffering depression or being triggered into a depression after plastic surgery. And instead of deflecting or denying or, opting out of being involved in that conversation, you really saw a need that is there. I mean, we hear about these things all the time, but it's rare for someone to actually take on the challenge of how do you really reconcile these two things to offer people the best outcome. So, wow to you.
Thank you.
I would love if you would tell us a little bit more about first the preoperative experience. You mentioned Reiki, and how do you, what are the actual, steps that patients can the patients go through before to optimize their preoperative evaluation?
So they all, when they come to see me for a consultation, I tell them about this experience and that they're going to, they have these things that are essentially not optional. Everything is optional at the end of the day, but there's a package deal. So it comes with Lauren, my nurse practitioner, who meets with people at minimum once before their surgery, but our preference is three times. Mm. Now, there is another caveat to this in that if I decide they're not a candidate for plastic surgery, whether that's for emotional, spiritual, or physical reasons, then we do have another pathway that is one of my more exciting things that we're working on right now and new programs, but it is for patients who are not quite ready for surgery, but need to work on some things. So that's one avenue, but if they are, good candidates for surgery and we talk through this process, then prior to they meet with Lauren, as I mentioned, she talks about what we call the surgical wheel, which are all of the facets of a successful surgical experience in terms of the root issues. So financial stability, do they have the support that they need with family members, not only family members that are going to take care of them or, friends or loved ones, but people who really support what they are doing. Because it's one thing to have someone there with you. It's another if there is a lot happening dynamically, or the dynamic between in the relationship. She does talk to them about those specific things, and a lot of that is just through personal experience with patients and being clued into these interesting intricacies that can really alter successful experience. And then she talks to them about their nutrition. We really focus on reducing inflammation prior to surgery. And she also talks to them about all of their medical issues. And she is a family nurse practitioner. So she takes everyone under her wing and can tackle a lot of issues with them. So that is at least one experience in addition to other visits with her if we have the time opportunity. She also gets them ready preoperatively with their medications and really helps to inform them of what to expect. So I found one of the biggest barriers to anxiety or managing anxiety is making sure patients are well informed and understand the process and know what to expect. Yeah. So she's also important in that role, in addition to the rest of my staff being all on board. We generally do not prescribe narcotics, and this can be an interesting sticking point to this idea or a mindset that patients, it's like, well, if they don't have narcotics, then they don't have any pain medication. But that is really not the approach. And so she helps to start talking about that process. We start patients on herbal supplements that are anti-inflammatory. So 3 days before surgery, they start arnica and bromelain, in addition to Trifala, which is a Ayurvedic stool softener. And then after surgery, they restart arnica and bromelain, in addition to turmeric and ginger, alpha-lipoic acid, and super B complex. So we really tackle it hard with the herbal supplements and anti-inflammation. Then we use the ERAS protocol, which is an anesthesia protocol that focuses on reducing postoperative nausea and vomiting and increases pain management, which is non-narcotic based. That is another tool in our operating room. So patients wake up very alert. They generally don't have any nausea. They recover rather quickly, as we would say. And they don't have that heaviness from the narcotics that are hard to wake up from. So we also do nerve blocks at the time of surgery to minimize the activation of those pain receptors, even when you're asleep, can really impact how much pain management you need after surgery. So that's a really important piece to managing discomfort. And then also we use ibuprofen and Tylenol. So with all of those modalities, in addition to a muscle relaxer on certain surgeries, if they need the muscle to be relaxed, say for a tummy tuck or a breast augmentation, if it's under the muscle, we do use pain medication. It's just non-narcotic based.
I mean, I think this is really an important conversation that can be extrapolated beyond, which is why I was interested in having a plastic surgeon come on the podcast. It's not necessarily kind of the wealhouse of what we're doing on Health Bite, but we talk about, you know, actionable bites towards health and well-being. And I think your approach of addressing pain in kind of a non-conventional, I would say non-conventional for Western, you know, culture, and not using narcotics post-operatively is something that can be extrapolated to pain in general, which I want to talk about, but also just living life. And the one thing that came to mind as I was listening to you speak is managing expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, managing expectations is so critical to outcomes. It's also so critical to relationships and our work-life balance work-life period, our expectations in terms of weight loss, you know, which is what I do, and how that may or may not motivate us to persevere. If our expectations are not met, we're so much more likely to throw in the towel, even when we are doing well, or even when we are progressing. If that progress doesn't meet what we have in mind in terms of our expectations, then ultimately we perceive that as a loss, which is not conducive to prevailing in any effort, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is where hypnotherapy comes into play as well, as we are trying to adjust the mindset, because I can speak till I'm blue in the face about, you know, you need to reduce your stress and meditate and do all of these things. But at the end of the day, if people are really hardwired for high anxiety and they have this heightened anxiety so that it's even hard to hear my words, they're just not absorbing it. The hypnotherapy is very important because it helps people to just rewrite the narrative that is happening in their subconscious. They don't have any control over, and it gets into a level that brings down the nervous system and activates the parasympathetics and really allows them to feel gracious to accepting what's happening and submitting to that lack of control, which then allows them to hear my words and to hear the anesthesiologist's words. And to, you know, there's this kind of calm and acceptance that takes place. So prior to surgery, they see Ian, my hypnotherapist. He would prefer 2 months prior to surgery to start with creating that baseline. And then he sees them once or twice more after that, so a total of 3 times. And then he gives audios to listen to while they're sitting in pre-op or the night before or even afterwards that are designed for sleep and anxiety management or pain management. So this is a kind of this package deal that is really the only, I don't want to say the only way, but it has by far been the most effective way to manage that tension leading up to surgery.
So patients will see a nurse practitioner, they'll see a hypnotherapist. Are there other modalities that you're using or utilizing preoperatively?
So Reiki is a modality that, you know, earlier, I think before we went on air, you had mentioned that you enjoy things coming to you serendipitously. Mm. And that is exactly how my life has played out thus far. But especially as I've come into this, you know, manifesting my dreams and putting my message out there, I have Reiki practitioners who have come to us and really educated me on Reiki. And then I've had my own experiences with it. So Reiki is just basically energy healing, and having someone who is a Reiki master put their hands on you, the energy flows through you and to the areas of your body that need it. And there is no data to show that Reiki heals anything, you know, doesn't cure diabetes. It doesn't. But in terms of anxiety and depression and stress, there's definitely data to show that Reiki is helpful. So there's a real opportunity there to bring it in. So patients see the Reiki provider prior to surgery to, you know, for clearing energy and just creating a more calm feeling. And then we're working on this currently, so it's not actually active, but my current plan is certain Reiki meditations or guided meditations, essentially, that are on in headphones while the patient is under anesthesia. Then afterwards, also the Reiki visits, especially helpful for the healing process. You just imagine the Reiki energy as it enters your body goes to those places that it needs it the most, because as I've been educated, Reiki is very smart and knows where to go. So it just helps to boost what your cells are currently doing. And it's divinely relaxing. So in addition to this, we have lymphatic massage, which patients begin 2 weeks after surgery. We don't do any massage prior to surgery, though we do have a full spa, so they have the opportunity there, facials and membership services and whatnot.
And I imagine this has resulted in you having less post-operative pain, and I mean, it's working, essentially.
It's working, and I'm coming to a point where I need to hire someone to me with putting together the data and actually studying what we're doing in terms of patient satisfaction and healing times. So there's a lot of exciting opportunity here for to show to my colleagues and to other people interested in introducing these modalities what the data shows. But aside from that, I'm just really enjoying watching patients have a much more pleasant experience. Now, some people just don't buy in. And I think a lot of those patients just don't come to me. So that's a benefit too. You know, there's in terms of becoming more grounded in who I am and the kind of plastic surgeon I am and the sort of practice that I provide, I'm more aligned with my patients who seek me out. So that is, I think, beautiful. I mean,
it's a mutually beneficial scenario. Yeah.
Yes. Now, you know, from a business standpoint, it increases conversion rates, meaning the patients who come to see me have a higher percentage of signing up for surgery, which is good for, you know, business and such. But for myself, it just feels more aligned and I feel more resolute about what I'm doing and the care I'm providing. And patients do too.
Yeah, I'm sure they feel cared for, you know. So that's lovely. I'm curious. So what happens to those people? What does that pathway look like for those people who are not deemed surgical candidates? Do they ultimately become surgical candidates? And what are the steps that they are taking?
Really interesting. So there are a couple of different reasons why people can be deemed poor candidates. And I would say by far and away, it's typically one of two things. Patients come for a tummy tuck and they have a large amount of visceral fat, which means that means the fat around your organs. And so when they lay flat on the table, their stomach still protrudes. And that indicates to me that there's a high percentage of visceral fat. And so in doing a tummy tuck on someone with visceral fat, the outcome is less than ideal. And often patients don't realize until I show them in the mirror, you know, what's going on. And then once I show them, they see like, oh, I gotcha. Mm-hmm. And then that naturally begs the question, well, then how do I get rid of my visceral fat? So generally I tell them diet and exercise is the standard that we tell people. But in truth, I feel a lot of it has to do with stress. Genetics as well, but a lot of it is stress and lifestyle modifications. We talk about meeting with Lauren to see if they're a candidate for the program, but Lauren's programs are not focused on weight loss. So she focuses on digging into the roots, but patients have to be ready for this. So digging into the roots to figure out what's going on.
The hungers, as I like to call it. I said, as I like to call it, is the underlying hunger.
Underlying hunger. I love the way you frame that. What are they hungry for? And some people just aren't ready to approach that. However, I have found that the people who walk through my door who are looking for some kind of change, they might say it's a tummy tuck, but they're open to the possibility of sorting something out. And so many of them are engaged enough to have the conversation. So that's, I think, a nice opportunity that I have. Another reason why patients might not be a candidate for surgery is, well, if I pick up on something, if I pick up on a huge life stressor that they're currently in, meaning their husband just passed away 2 weeks ago or a month ago, and they're just really depressed and they want to pick themselves up, they are often the kind of patient who comes in with very vague complaints. I just want to feel better. Look at me and tell me what you think I need to change. And I don't like to use the term red flag, but because I think it's kind of a negative connotation, but to me, it seems like plastic surgery and surgery is likely not a good fit for them because they're looking for something to feel refreshed, like getting a new haircut, but they're not thinking about everything that is involved in having surgery. It is a massive life event. Even a breast augmentation, which a lot of people take for, you know, I'll be back to work in a week and whatnot. It's a big life event and complications can happen.
An event on your psyche, however prepared or comfortable one is in their own skin.
Yes, absolutely. So there's so much going into it. They need to have a strong foundation before entering into this experience. So those patients, I also tell them, I've been doing this long enough now. I have a way of letting them down gently, but also encouraging them and always congratulating them on coming in and having the courage to expose themselves in this vulnerable way, but redirect them to something more that is more aligned. So usually the spa and the services that are available, the hypnotherapy, Reiki, massage, things that just make you feel good, but aren't necessarily a surgery.
Yeah.
So it all feeds itself. It's a very nice complement to a plastic surgery practice. And I trained down in Marina Del Rey. I had kind of an interesting fellowship down in SoCal. So I was in multiple different spots throughout the year. So Beverly Hills and Newport Beach and Marina Del Rey. But it's really interesting to use that experience and the practices that I saw that I was trying to emulate, but then bring in this very soft feminine approach just feels so right.
Yeah.
And so needed.
Absolutely.
Hi friends, it's Dr. Adrienne, and I'm dropping into your podcast to offer a love letter to you. I believe that our hunger represents our unmet emotional and spiritual needs. And by leaning in and listening to our hunger, we have an opportunity to hear our need and to respond. I know this not only from personal experience, but from listening to the stories of hundreds, if not thousands of patients over the past almost 20 years. I have compiled these stories, including my own, into Hungry for More, Stories and Science to Inspire Weight Loss from the Inside Out. This book is not just about weight loss, but about life, and contains lessons that I know to be life-changing. If you don't believe me, head over to my website at dradrienneedham.com, where you can obtain a free sample, or to amazon.com and check out the reviews for yourself.
You know, a few weeks ago, I was reading an article in the New York Times, I think it was, that was talking about the high degree of pain, physical pain, in the United States that is, I was going to say undiagnosed, but it's not undiagnosed. It just has not been found to have an organic etiology. So people who have, you know, chronic pain invariably at some point were started on narcotics without a true cause for the pain, despite testing and CT scanning and imaging, etc. And so, of course, the chronic medication use is now also augmented or worsened the pain situation. And I feel that, you know, what you're speaking to really can be applicable in this bigger sense of physical pain that doesn't have an organic etiology, and that lends itself to emotional pain, which is so relevant right now, and using these mind-body practices to really address the hunger, which is this underlying potentially psychic wound or unmet need that needs to be addressed. I'm curious about your thoughts. Is that something you've ever thought about, or yeah, what does that come, what comes up for you?
Yes, 100%. You're speaking to me now because we have a saying here. Well, Lauren, actually, my nurse practitioner, is my twin flame. she says we hold our issues in our tissues. And we have so much that is trapped. You know, this goes back to traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine. I mean, this is old stuff, but these ideas that our traumas, whether it's big T or little T, however you want to look at it, even now this is going to get really woo-woo if we can't get any more woo-woo, but ancestral trauma, believe it or not, some of the stuff we are dealing with is not actually our own stuff.
It's funny that I'm just going to have to interrupt you for a second, Emily, because it's funny, as Western trained physicians, we're so cautious and careful not to talk about these things or to preface them with woo-woo, right? Even though this idea of generational trauma has been validated and documented scientifically, and you and I have both seen it in ourselves and in our patients, you know, so we have the anecdotal experience. So I just want to acknowledge that and give you permission to be quote woo-woo.
Thank you. Yeah, it is funny that we do feel like we need to give ourselves permission, but holding back no longer. So I think a lot of it stems from our own experience, as you mentioned. And or experience with a loved one or a child who had a chronic issue, and then the only thing that helps is Eastern medicine. So it just starts to change things, and the whole functional wave of medicine is also helping to shift things in a certain direction and our mentality. But it has been interesting. Just down to even prescribing or giving herbal supplements to my patients before surgery is wildly, wildly against dogma.
Yes. I mean, that perked up my ears, to be honest. Yes. Yeah. Because, and the reason being that herbal supplements have been implicated for increasing potential for bleeding and also potential for liver dysfunction. And so usually the recommendation is to discontinue all herbal supplements, not to initiate them before surgery.
Yes, yes, absolutely. There are a few that have the strongest data to show that it increases the bleeding, the amount of bleeding during surgery. And those are the ones that are started after surgery. So ginger and turmeric. And even now with what I'm saying, there will be someone who disagrees with me, because the data is pretty mixed and soft at best. The arnica and the bromelain, well, let me take a step back. The reason we tell people to hold all supplements 2 weeks before surgery is because supplements are generally not FDA, well, are not FDA cleared, and that we quote unquote don't know what's in them. So we don't really know what's causing the bleeding, and then it's just best to avoid them.
Right.
Unless you really wanted to have a bleeding issue after surgery. So I think that sort of mentality gave me great pause in instituting this protocol. However, I was flipping through a outpatient surgery magazine, and Dr. Sharon Tofig had out of Beverly Hills. I'm not sure if you know her.
We are good friends.
Oh, you are? Oh, wow. Yes. Oh, I'm a huge fan of her.
Oh, wow. Well, maybe we should do lunch one day. So.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that. So she just, as I mentioned, the serendipity of it all, it jumped off the page to me. And I thought, oh my gosh, if she can do this for hernia patients, and she has the wherewithal to publish this and speak widely about it, I'm in. I'm going to. So I do have to say that this is the mentorship of certain people in my life have really given me the support I need to feel as confident as I do, or at least a springboard to feel like, oh, okay, somebody else is trailblazing and I'm feeling, you know, like I can do this in my own specialty as well. So I reached out to Dr. Tofig, and she was so sweet, returned my email within hours and said, oh, you just made my day. Yes. Thank you so much. Feel free to use my protocol. So I just added the Trefala, which is the stool softener, but otherwise I use her protocol. True and true.
Incredible. As we are wrapping up, we started with a personal story, and I'm hoping that you won't mind sharing a little bit more about how you learned about all of these tools. These are not things that we are taught in medical school. How did you come about seeking the training? Where did you seek the training? And if you would also, what aspects of these do you incorporate in your own life?
Oh, that's a juicy question. So I've always been a very intuitively driven person. And when I was in medical school, I did a OBGYN rotation, and I was taken aback a little bit in terms of Western intervention. And this in no way, shape, or form is a negative against them. I know that there's definitely a need, but for me personally, it did not feel aligned. So when I had my first pregnancy, my first pregnancy actually was a little bit of an anomaly. So that was my first one. Well, we'll step to the second pregnancy.
Okay. You had practice already. So yeah.
My second pregnancy, having learned what I had through my first one, I decided to go with a midwife. And it was a beautiful experience, but also felt very intuitively driven. And at the end, I was a week overdue and miserable. And she recommended that I do some acupuncture. And that I was like, I stayed away from chiropractors after doing my surgery rotation. I stayed away from acupuncture, you know. So I got a little like, oh, acupuncture, sure, I'll try anything. I'm miserable. And I laid there, and the needles go in, and she puts the TENS unit in my lower back, and my labor started right away.
Wow.
It was crazy. Wow. I was just floored by the fact that these little needles going into the meridians in the right way just was what my body needed to tip it over. And that I was sold on acupuncture ever since then. Also, at the same time, at the University of Wisconsin, where I was doing my residency, there was a pilot program happening on the one floor that we have our post-op patients, where you had the option of ordering a complementary medicine consult for every post-op patient. And I got all excited. And so every single patient, the patients I was managing, every single patient, I put in the consult. And they would come and do an assessment and either give the patient Reiki, massage therapy, acupuncture, or herbal supplements, or some sort of combination of aromatherapy. It was incredible to hear patients' experiences. So that definitely helped to inspire me. and gave me a little more tangible patient experience. And also considering how excited patients were to have something else to do that was going to help. Because everyone's interested in not taking narcotics. No one likes the way that, well, I shouldn't say no one, but people tend to not really enjoy that feeling or the side effects with nausea or itching or vomiting, you know.
Right.
Constipation. Then I had my burnout. And during my burnout phase, the COVID shutdown, I came across a woman named Lissa Rankin. Lissa Rankin wrote a book that changed my life. It is called Mind Over Medicine. And she is a prolific author. She's written many other books. And I am a Lissa Rankin disciple.
She has a TED Talk too.
Oh, she does. Mm-hmm. She's fierce. I recommend everyone read her book, Mind Over Medicine or Anatomy of a Cure. It's on point for physicians. So her book gave me this blueprint in terms of following my inner pilot light and really deciding for myself what the direction I needed to go in and what was no longer serving me. So another one of my mentors. And now, what do I integrate into my own practice?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the beauty of being more of a feminine vibe is that things I do are constantly changing. I do not have a prescribed routine that is the same every single day, because that's just not the way I jam.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoy listening to guided meditations. And I also enjoy, I studied Yogananda, his teachings. And there is actually a very prescribed way of meditating that I implement. I get really into it and then not so much, and then really into it and not so much, because it's just depending on my needs. I have seen the hypnotherapist for a variety of reasons. I still manage my anxiety because it's just in me. It's a part of me that's always there. Insomnia. And so those are the two main things I have seen the hypnotherapist for on a routine basis. Mm-hmm. And then I do Reiki and massage about every 2 weeks if I can.
I mean, I'm like about to Google your practice. How far is Beverly Hills from your practice in Chino? Because I'd like to check myself, right? I want to just check myself in for a couple of days.
Oh, man. I would love to form some retreats. That would be amazing. So the Chico, Chico, is north of Sacramento, about an hour and a half drive. So it is truly NorCal in Sacramento Valley. It's beautiful up here. It's about a 7-hour drive.
I may find my way there. And for other people who want to learn more about you, where can we find you?
Well, the best way to find me is on social media. So Emily Hartman, MD, is on Facebook and Instagram. But then Beauty Eternal is the name of my surgical practice, as well as my med spa. And Eternal Wellness is the spa. But those things all together are my practice. So it all's interconnected in social media. We have a website as well, beautyeternalchico.com. And people can email me. I love email communication. I can do DMs as well, but I don't look at social media every single day. But email is great. That's Emily Hartman. And there are two N's at the end. So Emily Hartman at mac.com. That's MAC.
Perfect. And we'll be sure to put them all in the show notes so that people can reference that.
Oh, perfect. Thank you.
Well, this has been such a lovely conversation. I love hearing about your approach and your mission. I look forward to hearing more and connecting. Maybe we do coordinate that retreat together. Who knows?
Oh, that would be magical.
Thank you again so much.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's Health Bite. Thanks again for tuning into this episode. If you loved what you heard, feel free to forward it to a friend or someone you love. And take a moment to write us a review. Finally, tune in next week for another engaging interview. I can't wait to share it with you and to see you then. Bye now.